bound around the Deathlands, for him to be certain of one thing. Minnesota hadn't been a state that was filled with a wild profusion of tropical plants set amid a luxuriant forest. J.B. had checked his sextant a fourth time, then a fifth time, and had shown the reading to anyone who would look at it.
Yeah, Ryan, it's Minnesota. North, right up close to where the border with Canada used to be. But it's not supposed to be like this. It's supposed to be...
bleak. And look at these flowers.
And that butterfly. It must be the size of a soup plate.
The insect's wings were a good 2 feet across and fluttered lazily in the afternoon sunshine. Two tips trailed from the back of the orange and brown dappled wings.
Giant yellow swallowtail. Habitats all over South America, right up to Mexico and into Texas. But the suggestion that such a beautiful creature could survive as far north as Minnesota is obviously absurd. Therefore, we are not in Minnesota. Quod erat demonstrandum.
He smirked in a foxy way at the others.
Which means that which was to be proved.
Great, Doc. So we're in Minnesota, but we're not in Minnesota.
Who gives a fuck? We gonna look around or not?
Okay, Jack, let's go.
As they moved away from the entrance and down through the clinging vegetation, they saw that the hill was very short. Effectively, the whole place was set in a shallow bowl of similar low mountains, making a flat-bottomed valley. Ryan guessed that it was this particular sheltered formation that kept the air so still and warm. But it didn't explain how such rare tropical trees and flowers came to be in Minnesota. At the back of Ryan's mind, though he hadn't mentioned it to any of the others, was Rick Ginsburg's information about other Freezy centers. One was near Big Bend, down in South Texas, and the other was somewhere close to the old city of Duluth, in northern Minnesota. One of Christie's areas of specialized knowledge was botany. In her birthplace of Harmony, there had been a number of men and women with arcane skills. Dulcie Harrison had encouraged the flame-haired young girl to read in the Ville's surprisingly extensive library on all aspects of horticulture and agriculture, pointing out to her that Deathlands was never likely to become industrialized again.
The land, Christie, my dear. There has always been the land, and there will always be the land.
Silver oaks and begonias? And that's a huge eucalyptus. No idea what that is, but I know that's a giant nasturtium climbing all over it.
They were following what had at first looked like the main trail down from the redoubt, but the many years' growth of lush foliage had obliterated almost all trace of what must once have been a well-kept two-lane blacktop. In the end, Ryan was forced to draw his panga and hack away at the dense foliage with a hissing 18-inch blade.
What are those wondrous blooms?
Hibiscus, Doc.
Thank you, young lady. I am much indebted to you. Hibiscus. It puts me somewhat in mind of the flowers that one might see strewn across a funeral bier. What a dismal thought is that.
The smell of the vegetation was overwhelming, and Ryan paused to draw breath and wipe the sticky mulch from the edge of the steel cleaver. Sweat streaked his face and body, and the hot shower seemed a millennium away.
Pardon me, young lady.
What is it, Doc?
I would prefer a more formal response than Doc. It makes me sound like a stock character in a cheap melodrama. But that is not what I was about to remark upon. You are wearing breeches, young woman, are you not?
Ryan turned around at that and caught Christie's expression of amused bewilderment.
Yes, I am, Dr. Tanner. What of it? You want I should take them off?
Oh, of course not. What a wanton and brazen reply.
You figure a woman should only wear pretty dimity dresses. Is that it?
I have no objection to working clothes for working women, but not breeches.
And women shouldn't have the right to vote either, Doc?
Doc shook his head, and for a moment Ryan glimpsed a dreadful uncertainty in the old man's eyes, a spasm of doubt.
I thought they already... But not back when I've been... If it comes, then I shall support it, my dear. You have the word of Theophilus A. Tanner upon it.
Ryan grinned at that, and turned once more to resume his battle with the clinging, suffocating walls of undergrowth. The The sun had clawed its way through the layers of ragged cloud until it was nearly overhead. The companions had stopped 3 times for a rest and a drink from their supply of water. It seemed to Ryan, looking behind them, that the vegetation was growing faster than they could cut it down. Their beaten path was already becoming invisible. Fortunately, JB had been taking bearings every 200 or 300 yards to make sure they'd eventually be able to track their way back.
How much farther are we going to go?
Another hour, I figure. If there's no sign of getting out of this jungle by then, we can head back to the redoubt. Rest up some, and then make another jump to get out of here.
Oh, terrific. Just perfect. Another jump will kill Doc.
You know a better hole to go to? Any of you? I don't know what this place has for muty life, but I don't take to the idea of spending a night out in the middle of it.
Go on longer.
How about you, Doc? You want to go on or go back?
Ryan knew immediately that it was a mistake to use the word back to the befuddled old man.
Back? I am already back, as you call it, Mr. Corder. How can I return whither I am already bound? Quo vadis, as the classics have it. Whither goest thou? Where do we come from and where do we go? The eternal enigma.
Well, I guess that's a vote from Doc for going on a ways.
Jack was breaking trail, swinging Ryan's heavy ponga with incredible speed and delicacy. A litter of hacked branches and broken plants marked the track of his passing.
Houses.
He dropped to his knees behind a screen of reddish-purple bougainvillea. Ryan gestured to JB and Christy to keep Doc to the rear, while he wriggled forward on hands and knees to join the boy.
Where?
There.
Jack pointed with a green slobbered tip of the ponga. A small river flowed from left to right, behind the flowering shrub. Beyond it was a clearer area of long grass. A group of single-story concrete buildings lay behind the remains of a rusting sec fence that was topped with razored wire. As elsewhere in this peculiar region, the harshness of the concrete blocks was softened by a coating of pale green moss. At first glance, the installation looked like the ruins of a federal prison. Ryan had seen enough of them in his life. Not many places had survived a century after Dark Day, but prisons were the grim exceptions. The friends crouched in total stillness for a long 15 minutes, watching for any sign of human habitation, or inhuman habitation. Other than a swarm of myriad tiny golden insects darting above the sullen, oily surface of the river, there was no sign of life. Ryan glanced down at his shirt, where he kept a miniature rad counter pinned, as did most of the Norm population of Deathlands. It had changed color from safe green to somewhere between yellow and red, showing that there was a medium hotspot not too far from them. Jack looked at his own counter, which had remained stubbornly green. He tapped it, but nothing happened.
Could be missile silos around here.
We cross?
Wait a while longer. I don't like the feel of all this.
The buildings all showed signs of serious damage, either from the big nuking or from earthquakes, or from the extremes of weather and rad storms that still raged around Deathlands. The windows were gone, as well as parts of some walls and several sections of the roofs. While they watched, there was a rippling in the thick grass beyond the river, and a long, copper-colored snake emerged, holding a paralyzed bundle of fur in its gaping jaws. It slid silently into the dark water, head high, swimming downstream in long, undulating coils of power. Ryan's guess put the reptile at 25 to 30 feet.
Phew. Big bastard.
Swallow you in one.
A flock of bright-plumaged birds was perched on the corner of the roof of the nearest building. At a distance, they looked to Ryan like parrots or macaws, but their presence told him that there were probably no hidden blasters covering them from the shadows. He turned and beckoned the others forward, motioning Doc to keep low.
Why? Is this some sort of sport, Mr. Corder? Or are we under threat from hostile Indians? I speak something of the tongue of the Mescalero Apaches, you know. I spent time among them only the other... once.
Christy, you and me go across the river. Get to the buildings and have a quick wreck. We'll call the rest of you over when it's safe. Keep us covered. Any questions? No? Let's do it.
JB unslung his Heckler & Koch rifle and steadied it in a notch of the bougainvillea. He switched on the laser optic sight and scanned the silent buildings across the water. Jack drew his Magnum and waited alongside the armorer. Doc had lost interest again in what was happening, and he sat down with cracking knees. He picked a tiny orange flower and inhaled the scent with his eyes squeezed shut. Ryan led the way. There was no way of knowing how deep the river was from its murky surface, nor what kind of vicious life it might contain.
Could try to wade it.
You never knew Bob Duvall, lover.
What happened to him?
Ryan could still conjure up the sight of a man called Bob Duvall, who'd been a relief driver on Warwag 3. He'd bathed in a similar river up near the Darks, despite traders' warnings about caution. A shoal of tiny fish had taken him. The creatures were no more than 3 inches in length, but 2.5 inches of that was teeth. They'd stripped old Bob to the bone before he could make the bank in safety. Ryan could still recall the sight, the whiteness of washed bone, and the dangling strips of mauled sinew, the fish still biting at torn slabs of flesh, while the river filled with blood. The screams hadn't lasted more than 15 seconds.
You'd lose your lunch if I told you. Now, we'll go upstream and find a safe place to get us across.
They eventually came to the tumbled remains of a stone bridge, with decorative little arches, some fallen, some still standing. It wasn't difficult to jump over the gaps, though Christy stumbled as a piece of loose rock rolled from under her boot heel. They followed a track winding near the edge of the forest. Between the grass and the nearest of the buildings, they passed something that looked like a gigantic anthill, if the area held ants at least 9 inches in length. Ryan didn't let his mind dwell too long on that. Christy waved an all-clear to the hiding trio across the river.